So, apparently Heather told you where I was, and so it was, I had an obligation to go to this class I was teaching. It's kind of, I don't know if it's ever happened before in the United States that there's a class, a graduate level class on loving kindness. And there's probably been a graduate level class on love before. I hope there has been. But on loving kindness, and it turns out that the kind of people who come to this class are people interested in religion. We have a Jesuit priest. We have a Muslim from India. We have I think he's a Protestant minister. We had a visiting Fulbright scholar from India who knows about Indian religions. We have a man who's can't quite tell what he is, but he's a martial art teacher with long braided hair who can recite fluently the Patanjali Sutras by, the Yoga Sutras. And he'll, we'll talk about something in Buddhism, and he'll say, oh, and then he'll recite from the Patanjali Sutras and then read from, quote from the commentaries about how it all works. And that's quite an eclectic group. And then we have a Chinese, I think he's Malaysian, I believe, but he's ordained as a Buddhist monk in Taiwan. And so the Muslim Indian is talking, says, oh, this is just like the Sufi saints. And the Fulbright scholar quotes from the opening verses of some Upanishads. He says, oh, it's just like the Upanishads. And martial art teacher recites the Patanjali Sutras and says, just like the Patanjali Sutras. And the Jesuit priest, who's from the Philippines, says, gives us all periodically, course of the class, and says, oh, that's just like the spiritual exercises we do. Saint Ignatius. This is just like the exercise of Ignatius. And he goes on. So like one of the exercises that he mentioned was, not today, but in previous class, was we were talking about a little bit like mindfulness practice and Buddhist meditation, and he said, oh, we do that. We have an exercise where we're trained to, when we see something, we just see it. When we hear it, we just hear it. When we think it, we just think it. And that's kind of, there's a Buddhist, very famous Buddhist sutra that says, in the seen, just a seen, in the heard, just the heard, in the cognized, just the cognized. And he just loves it. And he's ready to find similarities all the time. He just loves being, ecumenical, inclusive. And no matter what I say, he says, oh, that's just like. And today he was listening to our discussion about loving kindness and loving kindness meditation. And he said, oh, that's just like. For us, in the exercise of Ignatius, everything's a gift. And the whole world's a gift. Everything happens as a gift. And we're here to embrace the gift, to receive and embrace the gift. So I don't know if that's what I said, but it was quite nice. Everything's a gift. So we're here to receive our gift of life, of presence, of what we have here. It's quite beautiful. So here we are, whether it's a gift or not, we're here in this retreat to practice mindfulness. It's a mindfulness retreat. And mindfulness is certainly a practice to be present for our experience. Some people will say to meet our experience. So other people will say to be met by our experience. Some people have this idea that we're going out to meet our experience. Some people, they're more receptive and they're receiving the experience that they come. If you're open and present, what will you receive? What meets you here? And a big part of mindfulness practice is not the meeting or being met, but rather strengthening our capacity to be aware, to be mindful. And this is a very different orientation than most people have, because mostly the orientation is about what we meet, or even how we meet it sometimes, something has to change. Either the world has to change, I have to have a better experience, or I have to get rid of this experience. It's all about my wants and my aversions. Or it's about I have to change myself. And we have a culture of self-help where that's, you know, a big part of it. You know, how do I change myself, fix myself? How do you become a better self, a better person? Because somehow the person you are is not quite up to snuff. And so, you know, the subjective side, the objective side. And there's this amazing thing with mindfulness that it somehow bridges or finds the middle way between the subjective and the objective side. And so it offers something radically different than what our culture and many people are familiar with, which is not getting caught up in the subjective side of self and who I am and what I should do and my feelings and all that, not to get caught up in the world around us outside, but rather to be awake to our experience, to be awake to what's happening. And it takes a while to get a feel, a real feel for how being awake is different than the other ways in which we negotiate our experience, how we're trying to make things work and fix and do things. And even when we're doing the practice of mindfulness, it's often done in the old orientation of either I'm negotiating to get what I want, or I'm trying to fix myself in some way, as opposed to being awake. At the last retreat, recent retreat that I sat at, I was teaching at, there was a man who had been on a retreat before, and he spent the retreat trying to recapture an experience he had before. And so mostly, it doesn't work that very well to do that. And so he was kind of, you know, quite, you know, worked up and quite upset with himself because he wasn't able to have the same experience again. And so here he came with an idea about what he was supposed to have. He was trying to, you know, the orientation, your idea of what's supposed to happen and trying to make something happen as opposed to being awake to what is. So one of the aspects of being awake, this middle place, this beautiful neutral place or this mediating place or this liberated place that mindfulness is to find a place where we don't have to expect things to be anything or need things to be some way. We don't have to fix anything. We don't have to adjust anything. We don't have to be comfortable. It doesn't have to be our liking. It doesn't have to be the way we, you know, and if it's the way we like it to be, that middle place, we don't get caught by that. So that we expect that to be in the future or hold on to that in some way. It's a really remarkable thing, because one of the remarkable things that has to be about waking up is to wake up to what's here. It's the waking up that's important, not what's here. And in there we find freedom. In there we find the gift, or we find the compassion, or we find the love in that space. It's a remarkable space. So for the Buddha, the path to that was negotiated or found through this practice of mindfulness. And mindfulness leads us to be awake. And so we try to cultivate and develop and strengthen our capacity for mindfulness. And he taught, had a teaching called the Four Foundations of Mindfulness, where are the four foundations, the four places where we're cultivating and developing this capacity to be awake. And so in the course of this retreat, we'll talk about these four foundations. Today, I'm going to give kind of an introduction to it. Tomorrow, Heather will talk about the foundation of mindfulness of the body. Then I'll talk about mindfulness of feelings. And then Heather will do mindfulness of the mind. Then they'll do two talks on the mindfulness of what's called dhammas, or mindfulness of the truth. And the first will be the kind of having to do with the truth of how we get caught, how we're not free, because it's important to see that. And the second will be the truth of freedom itself, how you find free, what the insight that brings freedom. So we're referring to this text called the Satipatthana Sutta. And one of the most common words in this text, over and over again, is the verb to know. We practice to know our experience, to know experience of the body, to know our breathing, to know the experience of our feelings, to know what's going on in their mind, to know how we get caught, to know how to be free. The emphasis on knowing. And again, this I want to stress this because it's not about having, it's not about attaining, it's not about, you know, if you use the word experiencing, which is a nice word in many ways, but experiencing maybe is a little bit too subjective, like you're going to have some wonderful experience, some intuitive experience, some experience which is going to be the experience you're supposed to have, great harmony and peace and bliss. We're all here for that, right? And but rather to know. And some people, to know is a little bit dry and maybe intellectual, maybe, and so focuses on the mind, maybe. Some people are a little hesitant around this word, to know. But to know is the verb that's used over and over again in relationship to mindfulness. The other word that's used is to see. And sometimes we try not to use the words of seeing to describe mindfulness because some people sit up in the control tower and try to watch their experience, a little bit too removed. And so often when we give instructions in mindfulness, many of the teachers will use words like to feel, to touch, to receive, but then we seem much more closer to being with the experience. But we can't get around the fact that the Buddha, when he used the verbs he used, was seeing and knowing. I think because of this, it's possible in those verbs to find this middle place or this awake place where we're not caught or not entangled with what it is. We're just awake to what it is. We're there with it in a full way, not detached, not entangled, but just here in a very beautiful and full and open way. So that's the task of this kind of retreat. And it's well recognized that the first day of the retreat for many people can be challenging. As I said last night, people can be tired, but it's more than just tiredness. We come in the first day with the momentum of our lives, the concerns of our life, the backlog of our lives that's going to catch up with us. So, often what happens on the first day is not only the tiredness catches up to us, but sometimes the emotions we're carrying catch up to us, or the emotions we haven't, are unresolved and we haven't been dealing with, catch up to us. Sometimes we're surprised to discover how active our mind is or the preoccupations of our mind. And so all this stuff comes up in the first days of the retreat. And it's fairly common people think that this is a mistake. I should have been, coming on this beautiful, quiet, calm, peaceful Buddhist retreat so I could be beautifully calm, relaxed, and peaceful. And that's what it's all going to be about. And it better happen by the first sitting. And, you're not even at the beginning of the first sitting. You know, you look at your watch, and not yet, but I'll look into watch in a minute or two and see if I've gotten there yet. But in almost all spiritual traditions, it's recognized that there's a path of unfolding, of doing this. And when you start the path, whether it's fresh on the path or in a retreat, that you're going to encounter yourself. And you're going to encounter the momentum of your life, the habits of your mind, the preoccupations, the unresolved issues of your life, the emotions and feelings which you have a backlog and haven't been felt before. So it's not just tiredness that appears, but the strong tendencies of the mind, especially the tendency of the mind to be thinking a lot, caught up in its thoughts and concerns. And this is not a mistake. So one of the things I said last night is to, when you approach this retreat, don't see any of it as a mistake. It's what's happening. And so our task is to wake up to this and come back, and to wake up and not be in conflict with it, not feel bad about it, not use it to measure ourselves by, not use it to measure how well our retreat's going by. Just this is what's happening now. And this is an amazing protection for you if you just keep coming back and say, oh, no mistake, this is what's happening now. That's it. There's two wonderful things. I can do two wonderful things. One, you're less likely to be caught by it and reactive to what's happening. It's just what's happening now. The other is that attitude or that approach, this is what's happening now, is supportive of then just being mindful of it in a non-reactive way. It's like this. So my mind is busy and it's active and I can't seem to follow more than half a breath before I wander off in thought. No mistake, this is what's happening now. Gives you a little window, a little moment where you can just be mindful of that, be aware. This is what it's like to have a mind that's out of control. As opposed to having to fight that and feel bad about it. Oh, this is what it's like. So then you're not caught by it and reactive to it, but also for a moment you have this maybe something close to that experience of being awake, being mindful. Oh, this is how it is now. And appreciate that little moment. Oh, like this is how it is. Let me be present for this. Let me recognize this. So in the Buddha gave a interesting little parable about a quail. I think it's called the parable of the quail. That was out and about, and a hawk high up in the sky saw the quail and swooped down and captured the quail. Caught the quail and up they flew, you know. And the quail said to the falcon, you know, you caught me because I was not in my home territory. If I'd been in my home territory, you wouldn't have caught me. And the hawk, being somewhat proud of its hunting ability and strength and power, said, well, you know, I don't think so. I could have caught you even there. Where's your home territory? And the quail said, oh, it's in a plowed field. That's full of clods and a plowed field. Oh, you know, I could certainly catch you there. And you're exposed, it's an open field. And so the hawk said, well, I'll show you. So he flew down to a plowed field. In the middle of the field, left the quail there. Said, you know, so he flew back up into the sky. He's going to prove that he could catch him even there. So the quail found a nice big clod of plowed dirt and climbed up on top of it, exposed. There he was, open to the elements. And the hawk and then came swooping down, proud and sure of himself. And the quail, seeing him come, just in the last moment, jumped off the clod and hid behind the clod. It was probably a big clod. And the hawk couldn't stop in time and struck its breastplate right up and smashed against the clod. And I don't know, that's the end of the story. We don't know what happened to the hawk, but maybe it died or became incapacitated or something. It's one of these more violent parables. And the hawk became free. So then the Buddha, telling the story, said, well, just like this, if you leave your home territory, you'll be unprotected. And you'll get in trouble. You get swept up, caught by the hawk, whatever the hawk is for you. But if you can stay in your home territory, you'll be protected. You'll be safe. So then he went on to say, well, your home territory is the four foundations of mindfulness. To be present for your experience in the body in and of itself. To be present for your feelings as they're happening in and of themselves. To be present for your mind states in and of themselves. To be present for the truth, for the dharmas in and of themselves. That's your home base. That's your home territory. If you leave being grounded in your body, grounded in your feelings, grounded in your mind, grounded in the truth, you won't be protected. But if you're grounded in there, you'll be protected. And no hawk can capture you, grab you, if you're grounded. So here the idea is mindfulness is to learn to establish ourselves, in a sense, to take a stand in mindfulness and awareness. But not just anything at all, which is good, but the way we cultivate this awareness, develop this awareness, have the understanding and the knowing and the seeing that really supports us and protects us is to really learn to be mindful of our experience in the body as we have it. To be grounded, to be embodied, to be here. So we learn to be with our feelings, learn to be with our mind, learn to be with the truth. If you can take a stand in that kind of mindfulness, then all kinds of things will come your way. The world will come to you in all kinds of ways, but also you will come to yourself in all kinds of ways. Your fears will come, your desires will come, your aversions will come, your confusions will come. All kinds of, those are the hawks. And if you're not grounded in your home territory, those hawks will take you away. And I suspect some of you have had the experience of a hawk grabbing you by the throat, grabbing you by the shoulders, and taking you off. And you probably, sometimes you didn't even know that you were caught because it was so exciting. Or sometimes you clearly knew you were in the grip of something, grip of fear, the grip of hate, grip of lust and desire, the grip of confusion, and the grip of reactivity to what's coming your way. The grip of fear, the grip of reactivity, the grip of sorrow, of grief, of what's coming to you, and the world comes to you, and you think the world has got you by your throat, but the world never has you. No one has you, ever. But it's how we respond through these emotional reactions we have. That's where the hawk is. But I think the really great thing is to be able to know you can stand your ground, stand upright, by being mindful and grounded in your body, grounded in your feelings, grounded in the mind states you have, but grounded in the truth. And know that you're protected. Know that if you have that as your basis, that's where you take your stand, that whatever comes your way, you're safe. You won't get caught. You won't get captured by something else. So it takes a big shift for many people to appreciate the value of taking your stand in being mindful. Take your stand in being here and being present. Many people in the world take their stand in their desire. Take a stand in their aversions. Take a stand in their fear. Take a stand in their sorrow and their grief and their stress. Take a stand in their confusion. They take a stand in their thinking about things and fixing things and analyzing things and trying to think things out, trying to remember. Some people spend a lot of time, maybe some of you today, have spent a lot of time thinking about how to have a better past, which is a wonderful thing to try to do, right? Some of you are probably thinking about how to have a better future. It's very common for people to get caught up in their planning, the planning mind, over and over again. Some people on retreat will spend a lot of time trying to have better fantasies, trying to outdo themselves, and like all kinds of fantasies people can have. Food fantasies, vacation fantasies, sex fantasies. There's all kinds of things when my mind goes off, and wonderful fantasies. But in a sense, the more if we get lost in those worlds, we've taken a stand. Maybe you haven't chosen that stand, but that's where you are. That's where you're established. And to be established, to have that as a foundation of your life, makes you quite vulnerable. You'll get caught. You'll be carried away. If you can shift and change where you take your stand, where you're established, where your foundation is, you'll find that you're safe. And so here we're trying to have the foundation, cultivate the foundation of mindfulness, and mindfulness of the body, mindfulness of feelings, mindfulness of mind states, and mindfulness of the truth. And that's where we find our safety. And it's a beautiful, beautiful, profound thing to learn how to stand upright, take a stand or sit upright, and let whatever comes your way, whatever feelings, whatever's going on, and hold it in the awake state of mind, or hold it in the mindful state. Here it is. There's no mistake. This is what's happening now. And I'll be here for it. I'll be present. And if you can be present in your body, be present for it as a present moment experience, you'll probably find that it starts becoming safe. If you get caught in it and get pulled into it, assigning meaning to it, making up stories about it, having imagination of what's going to be, having expectations of what's happening, tying it up with your identity. This means that I'm a lousy meditator. This means I'm the best meditator. This means that I'm this kind of person. You find yourself probably tripping over yourself. So what we have here is a training or a practice to learn something that's very radically different than how most people use their minds, how most people use their hearts, how most people live their lives. And it's very important to recognize that it's a practice, something we practice and develop into and grow into. But I hope in what I've said so far, you can appreciate that this is something very different than how most of the time, are living with your minds. And here in the first day, probably you can appreciate even more because of things you probably already been, the hawks have gotten you, a few of you, a few times. But luckily the hawk is not that smart. And if you can just remind the hawk, you know, if you let me back on my homeland, home territory, I don't think you can catch me. The hawk will give you another chance. Many chances. And so here we are to get these chances. So mindfulness, the way we practice mindfulness, the way it's taught by the Buddha, is done together with three other qualities, or two other qualities, so three qualities. One is mindfulness itself. The second is something called clear awareness. And the third is usually translated into English as ardency, to be ardent. So the mindfulness part, and when we teach mindfulness in English, and we often kind of we kind of hold them all together. What we're teaching is mindfulness practice. And so mindfulness practice has these three qualities in it. And so we often say mindfulness is this, because we're talking about the practice, how all these work together. So the mindfulness part has a lot to do with staying focused, staying present for your experience in a particular way. The clear understanding, clear awareness part has to do with seeing clearly what's here, seeing that what your experience is as you stay focused, seeing that your experience arises and passes, seeing that things are impermanent as they occur. So it's seeing particular insights or understanding of how things are. And the ardency has a lot to do with being certainly motivated that this is important. You have to kind of do it. You have to kind of keep kind of applying yourself, coming back, kind of being present, trying to wake up to this, trying to free yourselves from the hawk, trying to pull yourself away from those talons, trying to not follow the hawk, not take a stand in your fear, your greed, your sorrow, your hate, your desires, your likes and dislikes. It's the ardency is not there. Let's take a stand here. Not there, but here. Here in being present. Here in being here in my body for the experience of here. So those combination of things is a big part of what we want to do. The mindfulness part, the focus of being present here, is for the body, the Buddha said, to be aware of the body in the body. It's kind of an unusual expression, the body in the body. Some translators call it the body in and of itself. It means that in reference to itself, not in reference to anything else. So if you're sitting here and you're feeling tired, or your legs hurt, or you're feeling blissed out in some way, to ground yourself in the bodily experience without assigning any meaning to it, without any reference to your body experience in the past, your body experience in the future, how other bodies are being experienced. Just feel it. The simplicity of this experience of itself. Don't make it complicated. It's meant to be a very simple thing. The body in and of itself, without any measuring compared to anything else. The feelings you have, to experience the feelings in and of themselves, without the stories we have about feelings, without what our society or family has taught us about feelings, independent of feelings we've had in the past, feelings in the future, what you think is supposed to happen. It's a radical thing to just experience feelings or body in and of itself as if it has permission to be there as it is that moment. It's not a mistake. It's something to wake up to be present for in and of itself in the simplicity of this moment, simplicity of how it is now. And you probably can appreciate how quickly we can make it complicated. And some people make it an engineering task to engineer and fix and do something about it. Or to try to resist it. Oh, not that. Or try to hold on to it. But the idea is to be very simple. This experience in and of itself. Just this. And then mind states. All kinds of mind states will come through. And we can make it very complicated very quickly. This is the right one. This is the wrong one. This means this. This means that. Keep it really simple. Mind state in and of itself is where the establishment of mindfulness is. And then the truth, which we'll talk later. The Buddha also talked about, when he introduced the practice of the four foundations of mindfulness, he said that when you're going to practice each foundation of mindfulness, mindfulness of the body in and of itself, mindfulness of the body in the body, you do it by letting go of greed and distress about the world. So this is an interesting thing. So putting aside greed and distress in the world, a person dwells mindful of the body in the body. So the first times I really thought about this passage, I thought, like, this doesn't make any sense. I'm distressed and filled with desire and wishes and things. And that's why I'm doing mindfulness. So I can be free of that. And here he's telling me, before you can do mindfulness, you have to let go of these things. You know, this is hopeless. So what I came to understand is that desire, what's helpful for this path of mindfulness is not that you have to let go of your desires and your distress about the world, about anything, because that's quite hard to do. But what's required is to understand, at least in principle, that mindfulness is not found by taking your stand in your desires and your aversions, in your greed or your distress. That's not where it's found. Your mind might keep going there and taking up residence in those places, but that's not where freedom is found. So there has to be the understanding of that and a willingness to not to push it away, not to say that it shouldn't be there, because you can't let go of it just like that, but rather the willingness to not keep going there, or not keep taking up residence there, not keep putting a stand there, not to give it so much authority. Our desires, our wishes, our aversions, our fears can have tremendous authority over us in our mind. There has to be some willingness. It has to be like a little crack in our usual way of operating. And maybe it's a very sliver of a crack that says, you know, I don't have to live there. I don't have to live through the perspective of these, through this point of view of my distress and my greed and everything. I could step aside a little bit and experience what's happening now in a different way. I don't have to let go of the greed and the distress I might have, but let me experience it from a different perspective, from my home territory, from my home base, from being home in my body, It's like, there's no mistake. This is how it is now in my body. I feel it this way. There's no mistake. This is how I'm experiencing it now as a feeling. Just feels this way right now. Feelings come and go. They change a lot. Right now it's a strong feeling maybe. And this is I'll experience it just as a feeling in and of itself. Now there's a mind state. Mind states come and go like the weather. This is what the mind state is now. Let me just hold it as a mind state. Be awake to it. Be mindful of it. This is how it is now. So there has to, I hope you understand this idea that in principle you have to understand this principle that we're not letting business, our mind, continue the way it's always gone. I'm going to be a free person. I'm going to let my mind do whatever it wants. And I'll just go along for the ride. The hawk will take you a long ways. There is a difference we're making, and the difference makes a difference. It's not to change anything exactly in our experience, but it's to be awake to the experience, to be mindful of it, and to be mindful of it through these places that are our home territory. I like this idea of we're coming home. And we're coming home not to get rid of anything, but to wake up to it. And the body is a very powerful place where we can come home and be home. And if you learn how to ground yourself here, take a stand in the simple mindfulness practice, moment by moment, you'll find your safety there. You'll find your freedom there. So it's not an easy thing to do. And so, it takes a while. You're very fortunate to be on a retreat, because in the kind of practice we do on retreat, the silence we have here, you're not talking and engaged socially, you're not engaged in your normal activities at home that pull your mind into all the things you have to do. It takes a while, but this kind of simple environment here allows you to begin to unwind. It allows the mind to begin putting aside, relaxing. But it takes a while. It takes some days. And if all we did for 7 days was not talk to each other, I would suspect that you'd feel a lot more relaxed and peaceful at the end of 7 days than if we all talked to each other. It's just simply that putting that aside makes a huge difference. Things begin to let go and soften. So I say this because you're involved in a process here that's going to unfold over these days that is not only dependent on your efforts. In fact, if you make too many efforts, you interfere with it. Trust the process. Go along. You're going along for it's a very powerful thing to be in this environment, and you'll find yourself as the retreat works you, as you receive the gift of this, you'll find yourself settling and calming down in a very nice way. Also, for those of you who are very tired the first day, you'll find that after a day or two, that somehow that resolves itself. And it resolves itself a lot faster if you're not fighting it or upset about it. So trusting the process you're in is a very helpful thing. This is just the beginning as we go along. The other thing that helps is because of the very powerful way in which the mind can be caught up in its thinking, its images and visions that it has. One way we can help everything calm down, slow down, so we can start waking up, is to come back to our breathing a lot. And in the Four Foundations of Mindfulness instructions the Buddha gave, the first instructions he gave was to keep coming back to your breathing, to connect to your breathing. Initially, he said the instruction was to do it very, very simply. It's so simple that I, for years, overlooked how simple it was, because I'm more sophisticated than that. So the first thing he said was, when you have a long inhalation, know that your inhalation is long. When you have a long exhalation, know that it's long. When you have a short inhalation, know that it's short. When it's long, know that it's long. This was too simple for me. And but you know, it's just a really simple, basic thing. I had a teacher. I spent a little bit of time in India, who was Munindraji, who was very famous for saying, "If it's not simple, it's not mindfulness. If it's not simple, it's not vipassana." And then when I had my all my traveler's checks stolen in Calcutta, I went to him that afternoon and said, told him what happened, and he said, "Oh, Gil, it's important to be simple, but don't be a simpleton." So to come back to the breath in its very simple way, just to recognize, feel the breath, know the breath as you're having it. And this idea, just coming back to the breath, simplicity of breath, know you're breathing, know it's an inhalation, know it's an exhalation, know it's something very simple about it, that's a long one, that's a short one. There's no instructions to judge it, no instructions to have it a better breath, no instruction that it should be like a deep Eslan breath, from your belly, and you're supposed to do all this special kind of way. Your breath as it is, shallow, deep, fast, slow, whatever way it is the right one for you to have. No mistakes. The idea is just to know it and come back to it. Keep coming back. And in the beginning of a retreat, it can be very helpful. Just let go of your thinking and come back to your breathing. Let go and come back. Just be. And it can help speed up a little bit this process of arriving here, settling down, letting the busy mind begin to slowly release its grip so you can start being here. At some point, as you feel like you begin to get the hang, get into the rhythm of your breathing, and you can be with the breathing for more than if just a few breaths, you can hang in there maybe for 10 breaths or longer, you begin feeling you're in the rhythm of it. Then the Buddha said, gave the instructions to, as you breathe, let the breathing help calm your body. Let it calm your body as you breathe in. Let your body calm down as you breathe out. So here are the instructions. It's one of the few places in the text where it's not just watch, not just be mindful, not just understand what's happening, but you're actually involved a little bit to change yourself a little bit. And then it's helpful to do this very delicately, because as soon as you're involved in change, you can get caught up in expectations and should be able to, and success and failure and all these things. But in a very simple, ordinary way, as you're breathing, maybe as you breathe out, can you just let your body relax, soften? As you breathe in, sometimes there's this very simple way, maybe it's imperceptible, but just the intention, the desire there, let me relax as I breathe in. Let the body get softer. Let me not hold so much. Maybe the whole body is too much. Maybe as you breathe, you can ever so slightly adjust how you're breathing, so your breathing is a little bit more relaxed, a little more easeful. Maybe as you breathe out, just as the end of the out-breath, you can ever so slightly relax with the end of the out-breath. So maybe you breathe out a moment longer than you would otherwise. It's kind of a little more release, letting go fully. As you breathe in, maybe at the end of the in-breath, a little kind of sense of release or relaxing. Maybe you breathe in ever so slightly more. It's like almost like a natural process. You're not forcing the breath. Or perhaps you find that your breath is more relaxed if you relax your belly. Soften the belly as you meditate, and it's relaxing. Maybe it's a little bit more relaxing if you don't, not involved in being the breather. You're not trying to control your breath, the one in charge of your breath. But you let yourself be breathed. Let the breath breathe itself. You're along for the ride. Just kind of you're floating on the breath. Or the in-breaths and out-breaths are like the waves coming in and off the shore. And you just let them wash across the shore of your body. And just feel. the rhythm of the breath, the body breathing, kind of coming and going. And maybe that's relaxing to kind of feel that. Or perhaps you can, if you're experiencing the breath, the breathing mostly in the breath, in the chest, maybe it's more relaxing to have it in your belly. Or maybe it's experiencing it in your nostrils. You can look and see, where is it most relaxing for you, calming to experience the breath? Ever so slightly, sometimes it's possible to adjust the speed in which you're breathing, very delicately. Can you breathe a little bit slower, a little bit faster? What's most comfortable for you? So it's a delicate thing. You don't want to spend a lot of time doing it. Some people get involved in engineering their breath and trying to find the perfect breath. There's probably never a perfect breath. But just a little bit, as you get into it and as you can stay with the breath longer, it can be helpful to do it just a little bit, gingerly. Can you just make it a little more comfortable? Can you let the breathing help you relax more in your body? As you do that, you're more in your body, you're more present. And as you do that, the more relaxed and easier you are in your body, the less fuel there's going to be for all that thinking that you might be doing. So the beginning of the text, this famous text, the Buddha says, there is a direct path for overcoming sorrow, limitation, distress, suffering. That one way is the four foundations of mindfulness. What are the four foundations of mindfulness? Putting aside greed and distress for the world. Putting aside, I'm saying, means no longer taking your stand there. One practices mindfulness of the body in the body. Putting aside greed and distress for the world. Again, it doesn't mean that you have to stop feeling greed and distress. It means you no longer take up residence there. You're willing to step back a little bit. Stand up tall, metaphorically. Take a stand in mindfulness. And experience feelings. Know your feelings in the feelings as they're happening. Practice being mindful of your mind states. Putting aside greed and distress for the world, be mindful of your mind states in and of themselves, in the simplicity of just this mind state. No, there's no mistake, just what's happening. And then, as we'll talk about the last days, the dharmas, if you're entangled, if you're caught up in your experience, that's what's happening. Just be mindful of being caught up in your experience. Notice that. Be present for it. If you can just be mindful of being caught up, being attached, that's that little sliver which begins having you making all the difference in the world. To understand, to know, to see clearly, I'm caught, is the beginning of being uncaught. So you don't have to be uncaught to do this practice. You just have to know it. And then if you can see what it's like to be uncaught, then you see another aspect of the truth. And so that's an important, in and of itself, in simplicity, what it's like to be not caught. And to appreciate that when that happens, in and of itself. Just simple. So I hope that this talk is encouraging for you. In particular, I hope it's encouraging for you to stay really simple and to begin a shift from where you take a stand, where you take up residence. And it's to take up residence in the simple practice of mindfulness. And if nothing else, I hope this talk encourages you to be curious about what is it he's talking about. What is it about mindfulness? What is it about being aware? What is it about being awake? Why is he going on and on about this? What is it? There seems to be something there. And he talks about the home territory, you know, my home, coming home. What is it about being aware? What is, And you all have awareness. It's something you have. It's your native thing. What is it? What do you find there? He talked at the beginning of the talk about this neutral place or this awake place, this place that's not subjective and objective, this free place. That's bizarre. But at least get curious. What is it about being aware? What is it? What's available there? And you'll discover maybe how to be aware, this magic or this special, this mystery of awareness, by bringing awareness to your body, to your breath, these first days of the retreat. No mistake, this is what's happening now. Okay? So it's a custom on these retreats, at the end of a talk, to go back into sitting for a moment or two. And it doesn't, not all teachers do it, but it's kind of a nice thing to do. Kind of reestablish the connection, to reestablish the purpose of being here, to reconnect with yourself in a fuller way. So you might begin by just checking in with yourself. Here you are. And if you check in to see how you are, what's your experience at this moment? How simple can you know it? What simple awareness can you simply recognize how you are at this moment? Can you check in and notice, how's your breathing at this moment? What's your breathing like now? Your breathing and your body and being here. Settle in, reconnect, let go of what you're thinking. And we'll spend about a minute just reestablishing a stronger connection here, perhaps in your home territory.